Good morning, Mount Pleasant. Welcome to worship this morning. Those of you worshiping with us online, we're glad we got the sound fixed and you're able to be with us this morning. I want to invite you to take your Bibles, if you have them with you, and turn to Exodus chapter 3 this morning. That's the second book in the Bible, so Genesis and then Exodus. Easy to find this morning. If you don't have a Bible, there are Bibles all throughout the sanctuary this morning. You're welcome to use one of those. And if you don't own a Bible, please take that one with you this morning as our gift to you. If you're worshiping with us online, you can go to BibleGateway.com or YouVersion.com, and you can find the text there. The words will also be on the screen. Exodus chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I've come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, and all the rest of the ites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be a sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. The word of God for the people of God. Hopefully on the way in, you got this bright blue sheet of paper or one of these on the front. If not, there are copies in the back that you can grab. If not, there are places on the front for you to take notes, things to write down as you remember. On the back is questions for you or your life group to use in your own reflection, and then scriptures to read throughout the week. The story is told that former President George W. Bush was passing through the airport when he thought he spotted Moses walking through the terminal. And so he told his Secret Service folks that he really admired Moses. He wanted to talk to him. So he called out, Moses! Moses ignored him and just kept walking. So Mr. Bush ran down the terminal and called out his name again, Moses! Moses! Moses walked even faster, seemingly trying to get away from the former president. But Mr. Bush would not be deterred, and so Moses finally stopped and turned around a bit exasperated and said, How can I help you? Mr. Bush said, Well, I wanted to talk to you, but first I'm wondering why you ignored me so long. Moses sighed and said, Well, the last time I talked to a bush, I ended up wandering the desert for 40 years. Where's Chuck when I need him? Come on. That may not be a true story. I just want you to know that. This morning we're continuing our series called Sticks, looking at some of the famous trees in the Bible. And we're not just looking at them because they're trees. This is not a horticultural tour. In the Bible, trees are places of decisions. And like I shared last week, every significant theological event in the Bible is marked by a tree. So last week we looked at the first pair of trees in the Bible, the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which I really wish had a shorter name. And that's where decisions are made, and those decisions have impacted all of human history. Should we obey God or not? The choice, you remember, was negative. And ever since that time, God has been working to bring humanity back to himself. And so this morning, in our whirlwind tour of Bible trees, we're going to make a stop in the shadow of a famous mountain called Mount Sinai at a tree that caught on fire. Now, we typically call it the burning bush, and it's there that we meet a shepherd who is tending his flock but can't ignore something strange that's happening. His name is Moses. You might remember him. After his mother saved him from an ethnic cleansing campaign in Egypt, Moses ended up being adopted by the ruling family of the nation, raised in the palace. And so for much of his early life, it seems he was actually unaware that he was a Hebrew, that his people were the ones who were enslaved by Egypt. He had all the luxuries of the palace. So I don't know how he found out. I don't know if somebody told him or what happened exactly that motivated him. But one day, Moses is out and he sees an Egyptian beating one of the Hebrews, and something happens in Moses. He kills the Egyptian, he buries him in the sand, and then news gets around anyway. Moses finds himself on the wrong side of the law. So he runs away to the desert, he meets and he marries the daughter of a shepherd, they have a son. He settles into life as a shepherd in the desert. For 40 years he does this. 40 years from the palace to a nomad's tent. And being a shepherd was not an easy job. Most days, Moses would have been far away from home as he took the sheep places where there might be grass and there might be water to sustain the flock. Moses probably wasn't home for dinner or even bedtime most days. He was always on the move with his flock. And then one day, Moses is out and about. He's near Horeb, which is another name for Sinai. The author of Exodus calls it the Mountain of God. And he sees a strange sight. He sees a bush, a small tree on fire. Now, that was not the strange part. A tree on fire in the desert, no big deal. I mean, the heat did strange things to the flora and the fauna, what little there is out in that desert. But a tree on fire in the desert and it's not being consumed, that is strange. Now, as readers, we know that, and we're told that this fire is the presence of the angel of the Lord, but Moses doesn't know that, not at the time. All he can see is that there's a small scrubby tree, and it's on fire, but it's still there. It's not being burned up. What's going on? So when Moses gets close, God calls out his name. The first thing I want us to notice, I want you to notice, is that God knows Moses' name and God knows your name. You're not an anonymous individual to the creator of the universe. God knows you by name. Well, that's kind of hard for me to fathom because sometimes, you know, I don't know if this happens to you, but there are people I encounter, I've known them a long time, and I look at them and I cannot remember their names. That ever happened to anybody else? Is that just me? Yeah, a few of you. Yeah, or somebody you think you've made a connection with, and they have no idea who your name, what your name is. You ever called your kids by the wrong name, or maybe you have to go through the whole list till you get down to the dog to figure out which one this is? All of that happens to us. But the creator of the universe knows the name of every single one of the 8.1 billion people who are currently on planet Earth right now. And more than that, he's known the name of every single person who has ever lived throughout all of history. God knows your name. Let that sink in. You are loved so much that he knows you and he calls you by name. And God calls Moses by name because he has a mission for him. God not only knows your name, he is aware of your situation. God knows what Moses' people are going through. And while, you know, debates rage about the severity of the Hebrews' enslavement and what it was actually like, the point is nobody wants to be enslaved. Nobody wants to be held against their will. These folks are being forced to work on Pharaoh's building projects and not being paid. And so Exodus says they cry out to God for help. And God finds help for them in the person of Moses. So when Moses first goes to look at the burning bush, God tells him to take off his shoes. Now that's kind of an odd command, isn't it? I mean, especially in the middle of the desert. Have you ever walked on sand that has had the sun shining on it for any length of time, yeah, you can feel your feet hurt right now, don't they? It's hot. It'll burn your toes pretty quickly. But taking your shoes off in a holy place is a way of showing respect, whatever the ground cover might be. It's a way of acknowledging something of importance that's taking place here. Now, this place Moses is at was not your typical holy place. It wasn't a temple. It wasn't a shrine. It was an ordinary scrub tree at the base of an ordinary mountain, nothing fancy. Now, today there's a monastery at that location, but on that day, there was just a tree and some sand and the shadow of a mountain. Moses had probably been by this place before. He'd seen it before. But it was the presence of God himself that made the place holy. Wherever he is a holy place. So God has gotten Moses' attention. He's removed his sandals. Now the mission can begin. Here it is, Moses. Go back to the place where you're wanted for murder. Go up against the most powerful leader of the most powerful nation on earth at the time and demand that he give up his free labor force. That's it. That's all you got to do, Moses. Easy peasy, right? And so God just says, now go. Just go. And Moses objects. Moses objects a lot. In fact, we only read the first of his objections this morning, but over the next chapter and a half, he tries to get out of this mission in so many different ways. He tells God he has no status or power, that he doesn't know really who God is, that his faith is kind of weak, that he can't speak very well. But my Old Testament professor, John Oswalt, pointed out that these aren't really things about Moses. These are really questions or even doubts that Moses has about God. Will you abandon me? What are you really like? Do you have the power to do all of this? Are you really able to use human weakness? And one by one, God responds. By the time we get to chapter 4, verse 13, God has responded to all of Moses' questions and doubts and concerns. Moses finally gives up then and says, just please send somebody else. And that brings us to what's behind all of this conversation. Moses believes he's unqualified. Now I'm willing to bet that there was a time in his life, in Moses' life, where he believed he could do anything. I mean, when he lived in the palace, I have no doubt that his ego could fill a room and then some. He had the best of everything. He probably even had servants, probably Hebrew servants, who would take care of anything he wanted or needed. And then there was that fateful day when his anger took over and he killed the Egyptian. Up to that point, Moses had understood himself to be a prince of Egypt, one of the privileged, one of the wealthy. But in that moment of anger, his self-image took a tumble and he began to define himself by his worst moment. Murderer, liar, outcast, runaway, unworthy, unqualified, shepherd, lowest of the low. Surely he was of no use to anybody now. Why would God call him? And why would God back him on this mission? Maybe this was just all a setup to get him back to Egypt where he would be arrested and tried and convicted. 40 years after the event, Moses is still believing the lie that he's forever defined by the mistake he made. And it's easy to point a finger at Moses and say, oh, he doubted God's call. But we do the same thing, very often for the same reasons. Not that we murdered someone, at least I hope not, but in each of our lives, to varying degrees, there are things in our past that we're maybe ashamed of, maybe things that we wish had never happened, things that we just can't seem to get past, a relationship that went bad, a business that failed, a job from which we were let go, and so many other things and places and people and events that show up in our dreams or haunt our waking hours. When that happened, our self-identity changed. We became defined by this one thing in our past: addict, liar, abuser, abused, broken. And then there are the ways our world holds us accountable for the things in our past. I mean, I'm honestly surprised that anybody wants to run for public office anymore or have much to do in the public eye because of the way that the world relentlessly digs up the past of those who do. And if you did something stupid in your past or you got in trouble or you said something that's considered incorrect, watch out. It doesn't matter that you've repented or made things right or moved on from the past. You're still going to be punished publicly and severely. The world tells us we are defined by our past. And so Moses believes that he's forever known as the guy who killed the Egyptian. But friends, God does not define us by the things in our past. I mean, yes, he calls us to repent and to change and to move in a different direction. But when that happens, we're no longer unqualified. And we're no longer defined by whatever happened then. I think about John chapter 8 in the New Testament. It's the story of the woman caught in adultery. Maybe you remember her story. She really was just a pawn in a power struggle between Jesus and the Pharisees. And they bring this woman who was caught in the act of adultery, they say. I've always wondered why they didn't bring the guy as well, but that's a discussion for another time. They asked Jesus to do what they should do with her. And for a time, he doesn't really answer. And when he does, he puts the responsibility back on them. He says, "Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." What I want you to notice, though, is after they all leave, Jesus talks directly to her. Up until this point, everybody's been talking about her. Jesus talks to her in her own burning bush moment. He says, "Has no one condemned you?" I would guess she's probably expecting he will condemn her. But she says, "No one, sir," and there's almost this understood, "Not yet, anyway." And I can't imagine Jesus saying the next thing without a smile, but he says, "Neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin." Jesus is the only one who could have defined her by her past and condemned her for her actions, and he chooses not to. Because that's what God is like. He will not hold your past over you. He is grace and mercy and forgiveness. And he still calls you by name to follow him into the future he has for you. You need that good news this morning? He knows your name. And he calls you into his mission. You are not unqualified. And Moses learns that at the burning bush. One other thing I want you to notice about this God who is a consuming fire but does not consume the bush, and that's this. God is not a tyrant who merely shouts, "Either do it or die." You know, there were other pagan prophets in the ancient world, and they were always said to be possessed, that their God took over their mind and body, and they had no choice and no control. But those whom our God contacts are always said to be filled with the Spirit, not possessed. God invites and enters into dialogue with his people. He doesn't force us into anything. He doesn't force his people to do what he wants. He loves to work with us, in us, alongside of us, but he will never force us to do whatever he says because that's not love. And God is love. So here's the question that I want to ask as we stand by this burning bush. How can I know when God is showing up in my life and how do I respond when he does? So this morning I want to give you just three quick suggestions from Moses' story that might be helpful in such situations. First thing is this, be aware and awake when things seem out of the ordinary. I mean, Moses was going about his business. He didn't have to watch. He didn't have a note on his calendar that said, "Watch for burning bushes today." It was an ordinary day in an ordinary place. Like I said, he'd probably been by this mountain, by this particular scrub tree, several times, many times. But this day, something caught his eye. Something grabbed his attention. Something was different. In those moments, when you find yourself spying a burning bush, pause. Take a deep breath. Don't rush past whatever it is. Pay attention to what's happening. Maybe you want to make some notes on your phone to take some time and reflect on what seems out of sync, what's out of the ordinary. You never know, because you might be standing on holy ground right at that moment. This past Monday was one of those days for a lot of us, wasn't it? We had a great gathering, just made mention, we had a great gathering of folks from the from preschool and from church and from Grace Unlimited, and all sorts of folks all over from all over the place here on the east side of the church to view the total solar eclipse. We even had one person who drove down from Minneapolis just to experience some Hoosier hospitality. Now, I'd never seen a total solar eclipse, so I had no idea what to expect, and I just thought it would get a little dark and we'd go back about our business. And the day was getting along pretty normally. We had music and snow cones and popcorn, and of course everybody had moon pies, right? You had to have that. Kids were playing, people were visiting, the bounce houses were busy. Just a kind of a normal Mount Pleasant party day. And then Jess got on the microphone and said we were just a few minutes from totality. We're going to shut everything down so that we could view the eclipse. And friends, I hope you saw it. It was amazing. I hope you got a chance to see it. I've never seen anything like it. The picture I took, which is on the screen, doesn't begin to do it justice. There are a lot better pictures out there. But as the silence settled in and this out-of-the-ordinary event occurred, I felt just kind of amazed at the beauty and the precision of God's creation. The verse that came to mind was, "The heavens declare the glory of God." Indeed. It was an unusual moment. It was out of the ordinary. We all stopped what we were doing and we paid attention. That's what we should do. When something out of the ordinary happens, pay attention. Because it might be a burning bush. Second thing, listen to God's voice instead of your inner critic. I'm pretty sure I know how I would have responded if it had been me at the burning bush when God spoke. My inner voice would have said, "You don't have the qualifications. You don't have the abilities. You can't do what God is asking you to do. People don't respect you and Pharaoh won't listen to you. You're unqualified." I have a pretty loud inner critic voice, and he's very good at what he does. Yours may not be as loud as mine, but I bet he or she is there, and they play that mental loop of negative self-talk in your head. And that inner critic can very easily drown out God's voice because we choose to listen to the critic instead of to God. If you can go to the next slide, I shared a couple weeks ago, I have this anxiety every year when Grace Gala comes around. I love doing it, and yet my inner critic is pretty loud in the days leading up to it. And so we've done this over the last several years now, and the last couple of days was once again a magnificent event. I got to be a buddy. The evenings were wonderful. Every year we say and we put on the shirts, it says it's the best party ever, and it is. Because there's no pretense. There's no one trying to prove anything. The evenings are full of joy. And so I've taught myself, I've learned to push through the anxiety and listen to God's call, because God's call is always the best. Like Moses, we can choose to trust God's voice every time because he always leads us to freedom. And then the third thing, don't be afraid to ask God your burning questions. See what I did there, burning questions? Yeah. I need another rim shot, Chuck. You can ask God your hardest questions because God can handle them. Moses takes the time to ask God everything he wants to ask, including, what's God's name? You know, if people were to ask, what am I supposed to say? Who called me? Who sent me? I can't say burning bush God, so what's your name? In many ancient faiths, knowing a God's name supposedly gave you power over the God, but that's not the case here. God freely shares his name because his name is a reminder of his presence. I am. I will be with you. I am with you wherever I send you. You can count on it. God patiently answers all of Moses' questions. He doesn't shame Moses. He doesn't evade Moses. He doesn't curse Moses or tell him to be quiet. The only time we're told God gets angry with Moses is when Moses runs out of excuses and says that, please send somebody else. Even then, God makes allowances for Moses' fear and doubt and sends his brother Aaron along with him. God can handle anything you can throw at him. So don't be afraid to ask your questions. Do you believe you're unqualified? Maybe you are. But you know, the saying goes that God does not call the qualified, he qualifies the called. I mean, it's a cliche, but it's a cliche and it's repeated so often because it's true. It's what happened with Moses. There are good reasons for God to call Moses, but the biggest reason God called him is that he was willing eventually to go. And Moses did leave the burning bush, and he went back to Egypt, and he led the people out of slavery, and he led them toward the promised land, the land of milk and honey. If God is calling you, your current qualifications don't matter. God will give you what you need to do what he's called you to do. And he may even be preparing you right now. I mean, God called me to be a pastor long before I said yes. And since I hadn't yet said yes, he began to place things in my life to prepare me, to qualify me. For some reason I can't fathom, I said yes to being on the speech team in high school and in college. My first major in college was a disappointment, and so it wasn't what I wanted. So I ended up majoring and getting a degree in speech communication, which I got to tell you is a useless degree unless you're going to teach or preach, you know. And he led me to InterVarsity, where I became the president of the chapter for 3 years. And the adult leadership was able to pour into my life. And then about midway through my senior year, the thought of seminary just kind of began nagging at me, dropped into my mind. God qualifies the called, and he'll do the same for you. If he has called you to it, he will give you what you need, just like he did for Moses. He's good, and he calls his people to new adventures out of burning bushes. Let's pray.